My guest, Grant Miller, shares his experience in two separate relationships with narcissists, saying that he obviously didn't learn his lesson with the first one. He details what a narcissist looks like and the many ways that they behave. He recounts what this experience cost him and what he gained once it was all said and done. If this wasn't enough, then he went through a battle with colon cancer. He speaks of his journey into self-love and self-care, from codependent to interdependent. Grant learned to put himself first, physically and emotionally. If you struggle with losing yourself in relationships, this is your episode. Grant's superpower is definitely vulnerability. Grant is a schoolteacher, writer, bodybuilder, gardener who loves cooking, birdwatching, hiking, and camping. Grant Miller is in the house. Grant, welcome to the Authentic Gay Man podcast. I know you got a great story to share with us today, and I'm excited to hear it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Maddox, for inviting me. I'm very excited about your new launch. And being a gay man who's been out there and done some things, it's nice to have an opportunity and a platform to be authentic and share stories. So I'm really pleased that you invited me to participate.
Oh, well, I'm glad to have you here. Very glad to have you here. And, you know, I always tell the listeners how I know the guest. Would you like to tell the listeners how we know each other, how long we've known each other and how we met?
Well, you know, we met about, it's virtually 2 years ago, isn't it? We met at just about the beginning of the pandemic, and we were a bunch of wayward souls almost, you know, kind of on the internet trying to connect and not really knowing how to do it. And we met through the boot camp, and you and I have been friends ever since. We've talked on a regular basis. We shared and done some wonderful things together. So even had dinner once too.
Yes, we did. And we all always have great conversations. That is a truism. Always have great conversations. So yeah, it's been a wild journey over these 2 years with the pandemic and some various things that have happened in both of our lives, and here we are to tell war stories.
Oh, can't wait. Got lots of them.
Cool. Well, so my first question is, Grant, what does it mean to you to be an authentic gay man? How would you define that?
Well, thanks for asking that question. I think I kind of alluded to it when I started. Being an authentic gay man is being unapologetically me. And it's been a learning lesson for me to get to that point, because it used to be so much of I'd put up a big wall or put a blanket over me so that nobody would really know who I was. And being authentic is just doing what I'm doing, speaking to you right now, speaking about who I am, sharing my feelings, not being afraid to be vulnerable, share some pretty dark stories that some people find uncomfortable to be here, but at the same time, they're worth listening to and people can kind of learn from that. So I think being authentic is being honest, being upfront, and being genuine.
I love that. I love your definition. It's been so interesting how I've gotten so many takes on a theme, and they've all been right in their own way. And if there was a way to mishmash them all together, it would be amazing. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. So, well, let's jump right in, and you're going to tell us about, you know, possibly the most challenging thing that you have had to go through in this lifetime and what that's been like and where you are in that process.
Wow. And the big thing about it, Maddox, is I don't know really where to start. That's the hard part. There was just so much there. And it's all about who we are as people sometimes. We get into a habit of developing relationships with other people, and we seek them out for various reasons. And it doesn't until you get through these relationships that you start to realize that there's a pattern forming. And then you start to think, well, okay, why did this happen? Why did that happen? And how did he react to me this way and why and so forth? And I started to realize that, you know, there's a pattern to it. And it wasn't until just recently, in 2 years, about the same time that you and I met, that I kind of discovered exactly what that was. And that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. So is how we get into a rut with a relationship and kind of discover why we're in it in the first place, and how we get into these relationships with other people that you wonder afterwards, after the fact, why in the hell did I put myself in that relationship? And that's basically a nutshell. And if people are confused as to what I'm talking about, it is about codependency, and it's about allowing a narcissistic person come into your life and basically take you over so that you don't exist anymore. And that's my story, and that's what I want to talk about tonight.
Beautiful. I can't wait to hear it, because I think it's a highly relative topic. I have heard many men speak on, you know, not necessarily the way you're going to speak, but have talked about having been in a relationship with a narcissist or being involved in something that was highly codependent. It's a pretty common thing. So I know that what you're going to share today is going to be not only applicable, but very beneficial to the people that are out there listening to this.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be honest with you too, Maddox, I think it's beneficial for me to share my story. The more I tell my story, the better I come to understand myself and how that relationship went and how I develop future relationships as a result of what I went through. So I think it's beneficial for just as much for me as everyone else. So and you'll have to excuse me, as the old me is kind of trying to grab right out right now, saying, Grant, don't talk about yourself. Don't be, you know, overly show what's important to you. Make sure it's for somebody else. So I'm just letting you know that that old guy, the old Grant that I work so hard to change, still tries to creep in sometimes. So as I was saying to you, you know, that it's also beneficial to me, that little voice in my side was saying, yeesh, Grant, you should be sharing that. You should be talking about something else. So you'll hear that little voice come out, and I'll mention it because I'm very conscious of it. So.
Well, you have my permission to completely talk about your experience, you and your experience. That's what we're here to do today. And I'm gonna prod you a little bit to kind of, you know, really get vulnerable with us, because, you know, that's the way we really connect. And I know you know that.
Yes.
So as I said to one of my guests the other day, I want you to tell the story in a manner that the listeners feel it. But no pressure.
Well, you know, let me set the story. Kind of like, you know, the Golden Girls, you know, picture this. About the year 2010, I had been single for almost 3 years. And my previous relationship was with a man who was an absolutely beautiful man, but he became addicted to crystal meth. And ultimately, I lost him to first crystal meth and then to heroin. And he basically died in a very poor neighborhood in Vancouver. And it really threw me for a loop. And it took me 3 years to kind of work through that. And so it was about 3 years after that, I said to myself, you know, it's about time that you get out there and try to look for a relationship. Why don't you put yourself out there again? And I asked a friend, you know, you got a ton of really nice looking guys on your Facebook page. Can you introduce me to some of them? And he said, snapped his fingers. He says, I know somebody. And he introduced me to this person. And it was almost like there was this instant connection. He was such a charmer. We talked for the first time for about 3 hours, and we got to know each other. And it wasn't long after that that we were actually going to meet and actually get together and have our first dinner together and everything. And we did. And let's just say that the man charmed the pants off me. The first night that we went home to his place, he actually read me Dorothy Parker poetry. And I'm thinking, oh, someone right after my soul, somebody who's poetic, somebody's romantic. And it's right up my alley, because I love poetry. I'm a writer, and I have written poetry in my past myself. So I was just absolutely enthralled and say, finally, somebody that can really relate to me. And so I jumped in, feet first, And to make the story worse, he was currently at that time breaking up with his ex-lover, and he was still living with his ex-lover, but his ex-lover had moved out. But there was this big, you know, he's got to move his stuff out and all that stuff. So he was upset and crying half the time because of his ex-partner. And oh, me, someone who was being really romantic, read me Dorothy Parker poetry. I was just absolutely enthralled. So I ignored the fact that he was getting over a relationship and just jumped in feet first with him. And it wasn't long after that that I moved his stuff into my basement and moved him into my house. And that's where it went from. He was a very attractive man. He was very out there, very charismatic with me. And again, I felt absolutely blown away that someone like this would take the time to share all this with me. And so I was just absolutely enthralled. And I fell in love with him almost immediately. And I disregarded all the warning signs, all the red flags, and I just jumped in. And that's where it started. And then where it progressed after that is where the story really starts. And that's the hard part.
He was a master at what he does, isn't he?
Well, you know, I'm kind of jumping forward to 2022 because now my experience in dealing with a narcissistic person is so much different. And, you know, there's a feeling in my head sometimes that I wish that I had hindsight. But, you know, the old saying about having hindsight doesn't really help you much after you've been through it. But if I had known what I know now, I would have looked at every single one of those red flags and say, this guy's not for me. I shouldn't go anywhere near him.
Well, for the value of the listener, because we're all familiar with the term narcissist, but there's a lot of people that don't really know what that means or how it legitimately shows up with a person like that. Can you give us some history and some stories and what unfolded and what you went through?
Well, first of all, I'm going to use the example of one of your former presidents. Recently, good signs of what an actual narcissist is. A narcissist is someone who really has no concept of everyone else in the world. It's basically about them as a person. They make everything around them about them. If someone doesn't agree with them, they turn themselves into a victim, and then you're all of a sudden the bad one. They take over everything. They can just blow up at the drop of a hat. And then forget that they'd blown up. You know, my ex-husband, he must have told me to fuck off, let's see, daily. And at first I thought, you know, where's this coming from? I thought, oh, you know, well, let's deal with it. And, you know, so these kinds of things started coming. And that was one of the first red flags that I mentioned earlier. So the fact that there was just no concept of emotional outbursts. That was one sign that he was narcissistic. Like I said, he would just, one time I was making cappuccinos on the latte maker, and I was doing this for guests that we're having over for dinner. He berated me for using cream, and he said, "You shouldn't be using it. The thing's broken." And he screamed at me 15 minutes while the guests are sitting in the other room. It was just something like that. You know, the normal person would say, "Hey, you know, it's just a coffee maker, it's just a couple, you know, cappuccinos, no big deal." But for him, it was, I'm using his espresso maker in the wrong way. And he felt compelled to really ream me out in front of everybody else. They could all hear what they were saying. And I'm standing there going, you know, what do I do? I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have said that, you know, and I'm start getting into that, you know, codependent thing. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot about codependency because, you know, if you get into a relationship with a narcissist, you also have a role to play in it. So this is part of my discovery. You know, some of the things, I know you're going to ask me, what were some of the examples that I got from him? He once told me, we were on a cruise in the Baltic, and we were in a bar in Copenhagen, and I said, this has been a really fun relationship. I'm really enjoying this. We're on a cruise. We're really getting to know each other. And the conversation went around to, he said, you know what kind of guy I'd like? And I said, no. And he said, see that guy over there? And he pointed to this big muscular guy. He must have been about 250 pounds. He says, I want a man like that. And I'm sitting there looking down at myself. I'm 210. I, as you can see, I'm a muscular person. And I think being at 210, I thought I looked pretty good. But his idea was that, well, he wanted somebody who was 250 pounds. So red flag. What did I do? I journaled about it as I was flying back to Canada. And I thought, you know, I have a choice here. I could stay with him and try to do something to make this easier, or I could leave him. I stayed with him and I began to take steroids and I pumped myself up to the point where I was a 250 pound man for him. And that was my way of saying, okay, this is what he wants. This is what he's going to get. If I want a relationship so badly, I'm going to make him happy. And by doing that, I injured my heart. I had an enlarged heart. My doctor had said that it looked like I had had a heart attack. But because I felt this need to be that 250 pound man for him, that I put my own life in danger, basically, without even knowing. And now I pay the consequence for that. So it's been that was one of the warning signs. And, you know, as you're sitting there, you know, Maddox, you're nodding your head saying, wow, like, that's an amazing story. But how could people not see that doing something for someone else is such a bad thing? Because I was harming my body, but I was doing it out of a need to please him. And for me, it seemed clear. Do that. If you want a relationship to work, do what makes it work for him.
When you look back on that, Grant, how does that feel?
Horrific. Horrific. The thought that I didn't have enough self-respect for myself to say, I'm good enough at 210. I'm a decent guy. I'm more than just muscles. I'm a human being. I'm a kind soul. I got a love to give. And I think in my head at that time, Maddox, was that this is going to be my last relationship in my life. I've had 5 relationships in my life. The last one ended because of someone's drug addiction. I'm going to make this damn relationship work, even if it kills me. And literally, it almost did.
Well, you have clearly stated what it cost you in your physical health. What were some of the other costs of that beyond the heart issues?
The emotional stuff. You know, as a gay man, and I'm, you know, I keep saying I'm 210, 220 pounds or something like that. That the effects of some of the things that he said, they were emotionally abusive to me. And that worked its way into my head saying, well, if he's saying that, it must be true. The fact that he said to me, oh, by the way, my next relationship is going to be with an African Canadian. And I'm going, what? I'm white. Then why are you with me? If you really want an African Canadian, go for it. But that was his way of saying, well, you know, this is just me. And then when I would question him on it, he'd say, oh, I don't remember that. I was just joking. And what it did for me was it made me feel like I was insignificant because I wasn't what he wanted, but yet he wanted me and he wanted me to do the things that he wanted to do. But that was it.
And there was a method to what he was doing. What do you, I mean, I know what I think was behind that, but what was the motivation to do things, to say things to you like that?
Well, and again, this is all hindsight, having lived it and gone through it and analyzed it and really thought about it. A narcissist is really good at sinking their claws into people. They know how to get them so that they're there. And once they're there, then they turn the tables and they become something that's totally different. I mean, he really was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I mean, at one minute he could be the nicest, you know, and then the next minute he could be throwing things out the door, screaming, telling me to fuck off, going to the neighbors and telling them to fuck off for God knows what reason. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, okay, what do I do? How do I make this better? What do I do to stop this? And my reactions were always something other than what I could have been doing. For example, when he first started telling me to fuck off, I thought, okay, well, this is just man to man. So I told him to fuck off and I got angry with him. And I found that the more he got angry, if I got angry too, it just escalated. And so what did I do? I learned to back it off. Say, okay, you know, I'm not going to get upset with him and everything, and just calm him down and let it pass. And that ended up being good for him, but not so good for me. So when you ask, how did it hurt me? It robbed me of my spirit. It robbed me of who I was as a person.
I can see that.
You know, being in a relationship for 6 years with a narcissist, I truly lost who I was. And it's taken me how many years to sort of gain all that back and actually get to a point where I'm beyond that and moving on?
I think that's the objective of a narcissist. I think that they set out to get you to lose yourself. They undermine your self-confidence and self-esteem. They make you feel very, very insecure by the things that they do, the things that they say, and the way that they treat you. And I think that that's all in a pursuit of being able to completely control you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, your listeners might be saying, well, why the hell didn't you get out? And for me, the response was, I've got to make this work. There's something wrong with me. This is a reason why he's doing this.
Well, and part of it is because when he's charming, he's really charming.
Yep.
You know, I have not personally lived through a narcissistic relationship, but I certainly have had enough friends and known enough people that have to, and read enough to know what it looks like. And yes, charming is an understatement there.
You know, when you're saying that you know of people who have been in that situation, I mean, a lot of my friends knew that he was a narcissist, but none of them really said anything to me. They just sort of let the relation go through. I think out of respect for me, they didn't want to say, Grant, you really shouldn't be in this relationship with this guy. He's bad news for you. They did afterwards, after the fact, but yeah.
Well, you know, that's a very slippery slope because in my experience, the times I have done that, they had no place for hearing that. There was no opening for that to actually get through. Yeah. And most of the time, it just creates like friction and pushes them away from you. Like if your friends had come to you and said, we think he's a narcissist and this is really unhealthy for you, that would have pushed you away and you would have in turn probably pushed them away because you weren't, he's so charming, you weren't open to hearing that.
You're 100% right. So again, I mean, how can one be honest with a friend when you see this in a relationship? You know, I don't think I would have listened to them, unfortunately.
Yeah. I really wouldn't have. Well, I mean, we're all aware of lessons that we had to get the hard way and we had to get them on our own. You know, nobody could have actually like circumvented that lesson. Mm-hmm. We just had to get it the way we got it. And that's a thing, you know, sometimes our rite of passage is, yeah, sometimes it is a rite of passage for us.
Yeah. You know, on the subject of self-respect, I found out very early in the relationship that he was cheating. I was actually away at camp with my school kids in June of that year that we had met. And I'll be damned if he wasn't bringing guys into our bed. And, you know, I actually took a picture of myself on a horse with my shirt off and saying, you know, one of the other teachers took the picture and I sent it to him and say, hey, you know, can't wait until I get back. And he says, oh, wow, great picture. but he's lying in bed with some other guy and had sex with at least two or three people while I was gone that week. And that was just the beginning. And again, I didn't know that story until, well, later. So while we're on the topic of cheating, I think narcissists also don't, they have two sets of rules, a set of rules for them and a set of rules for others. Now, the average person would say, well, if you're my boyfriend and you're in the second bedroom and you're posting pictures of yourself on Nudes Dudes or whatever it was called, he was posting a picture of himself naked, wanking off. And my ex-partner sent me a message and said, wow, your new boyfriend's really cute. He's got this fantastic picture on Dudes Nudes or whatever it was called. And I'm going, what the fuck? So he was my boyfriend at the time. I said, you know, you're in my house and we're trying to make this our house, but should you really be doing that? And he said, oh yeah, it's just a joke. It's just to meet friends and everything. And I said, no, you're going to take it off. So that was one time I actually stood up to him. He actually did take the pictures off. And, you know, again, hindsight, if I'd listened to my little voice in there and stood up for myself a lot more, that things would have been different. But then again, that would have been, let's see, how many red flags we've talked about? Three or four now. I mean, posting nude pictures of himself on a site, that's another warning, you know?
Yes. That,
especially one that's meant for that.
Well, and one of the things that I certainly have come to realize in listening to all the stories I've heard about narcissists is you may every once in a while have a small victory. But for the most part, you can't win.
No.
In the bigger picture, you can't win. You won't ever win in a relationship with a narcissist. And no matter what you do, it's never going to be good enough.
No, agreed 100%. Do you know, we would often have to, we argued, right? And sometimes you had to literally argue with them for 20 minutes just to admit that we were actually arguing. So it wasn't a matter of just, well, okay, we're arguing and I'm mad because you went over and screwed this guy outside. It was, no, we're not arguing. And it literally, I would have to argue with him that we were arguing. And then once we got past that, then it was trying to argue what the whole thing was about. And it was either, oh, it didn't happen, or, oh, I was just kidding, or whatever. And it would be, okay, so what did I do wrong in this? You just cheated on me, and I'm feeling like I've done something wrong. And that's what narcissists do. They take control of the situation. They turn the tables on you. They become the victim, and you're the one that's doing everything wrong.
Well, and I think that's why they undermine your self-confidence and self-esteem. So it's easier to do that. Mm-hmm. It's easier to manipulate you when you have been weakened. And so all of the things that they say and do are about weakening you. And then the charm is to draw you back in so you won't leave. Mm-hmm. They want you to be completely dependent on them. So we've talked a little bit about what it costs you physically, emotionally. Talk a little bit about what you gained. Talk a little bit about, there's a silver lining in anything. What did you walk away with that you would not have had if you hadn't gone through the relationship, the experience with the narcissist?
Okay, I'm going to preface that before I answer the question and say that after my marriage and I divorced him, I immediately got into another relationship with another narcissist. So obviously in that marriage, I hadn't learned the lesson. So, you know, the fates delivered another one on my doorstep, and I got into that relationship for 2 years. So I hadn't learned my lesson.
You know, so, it sounds really heinous, but the truth of the matter is the universe is always working for our highest good. You know, it is going to put the things in your pathway that are going to, no matter how many times you have to go through it, eventually you're going to wake up and smell the coffee.
Agreed. And so to answer your question, what's the silver lining in this is it's taken me, well, since through this whole voyage through COVID, and where this is where you come into the story, and how we've talked about this boot camp and these other places that we were together, of discovering what I am as a person. I'm a school teacher by trade, and I've always been a caregiver. You know, teachers, nurses, social workers, they're all usually caregivers. And in my personal life, I was very much a caregiver. I mean, with the gentleman that had the drug addiction, I took care of him. With my husband, I took care of him. I supported him financially. I supported him mentally and physically. And I supplied everything that he ever needed to make him happy. But what I learned, and the silver lining, is that I was putting myself last after everyone. And the silver lining for me is that I have learned to turn that into, I have to put myself first. I have to take care of myself first. I have to respect, I have to love myself in order to love others. I mean, we all know what RuPaul says at the end of every show, and that is so incredibly true. If you don't love yourself, how can you love somebody else?
Well, and if you don't love yourself, how can you expect others to love you?
Well,
I mean, we can't expect anybody to give us something that we can't give ourselves.
And that's where a narcissist comes in, and that's why they're so insidious around they grapple their hooks into you, and they really, you know, they bind you into that situation so you feel like you can't get out because they're so good at it.
They do what they can to make you believe that they are your last chance. Mm-hmm. And that if you break away from them, no one will ever have you ever again. They are your only opportunity. That is like 101 narcissism.
And you know, Maddox, I know that you work a lot with women, and I'm sure you've dealt with women who have been abused. And a lot of the stories are the same situation. When you get into an abusive situation, it's always that you are powerless. You are not capable of making your own decisions. They take away all your power. And as a man, that can be debilitating. The thought that a man like me could allow someone else to take the power away, so to the point that you feel like you're worthless, that you can't make a decision, you can't live without them. You can't live with them either, but you can't live without them, and that you're just in this quandary that you can't escape. Oh, there's nothing I can do. I just have to live with it. It's just, this is my fate in my life. And that's literally what he put into my head. And I have to back up and retract that. I put that into my head because of my situation with him. And you know, Maddox.
So I want to acknowledge you for taking accountability and responsibility there, because you know, it's real easy for it to just to, you know, make it all about the other person. And in a relationship, it takes two to tango. Both parties have their role. He couldn't play the role of the narcissist. Every narcissist has to have a codependent. Yeah. You're the ideal match for a narcissist. But when you no longer are willing to demonstrate or play into codependent behavior, then you suddenly have nothing to offer him.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, you know, at the beginning of the podcast, you said, what is it to be authentic? And I think to be authentic, you have to own up your side of the story. I mean, what was my role in that relationship? It's exactly that. I was codependent. I allowed him to do those things. I was a caregiver. My whole goal, my dad told me as a kid, caregiver for other, take care of other, everyone else. It's selfish to be taking care of yourself. Don't, if you think about yourself, that's vain. And I carried that all my life up until now.
Man, there's a lot of us that got that message. And, you know, for the listeners, I just want to say that is the biggest bunch of bullshit I've ever heard. Put everybody before you, because putting you first is selfish. Could not be farther from the truth.
And so my role in this was that I gave him all my power. I let him do all those things to me. And now, these years after the relationship and after the second relationship, I've come to recognize that I can't care for other people if I can't take care of myself. And as a result, I think, you know, this is kind of outside our pod, but I mean, after I split with the second guy, The universe threw me another story, and I came down with colon cancer. I discovered I had colon cancer. And here I was 100% alone, no relationship, and none of my friends really available to help me to go through the chemo and everything. And it just felt like the world is just handing me the same story over and over again, that I have to be dependent on other people in order to survive. And I think the universe sent me the cancer, not because, well, cancer comes for various reasons, but I had it. And I think it was the message I got was, Grant, in order for you to survive, you're going to have to take care of yourself. You can't sit around and wait for other people to be there and say, oh, poor Grant, we feel badly for you. You've got cancer. We'll do everything we can to make you feel better. I had to come to the realization that I have to take care of myself. And I did. I got through it. I'm in remission.
I have a question concerning specifically that. So I want to kind of interject for a second. When you finally made the decision to put you first and take care of you to get you through what you needed to get through with the cancer scare, when you started to put you first and take care of you, how did the rest of the world respond? What was your experience?
Well, it's because my reaction was different. I'm going to tell you a story about my classroom. This is during the time when I was taking my pills. And I told my class, I share with my class. I do share my experiences. I'm out to them. When I had cancer, I told the kids, look, Mr. Miller has cancer. He's going through chemo. He'll be able to work after his operation and everything. But sometimes you'll have to help him because he'll know. I always speak third person, you know, when I'm talking to kids, right? That you'll need to help him when he's having problems. And I can remember one day, and this links into the question of, you know, what was the decision? The decision for me was to be vulnerable to other people. I was standing at the board, and I was trying to write something. I think it was a word in French, 666, which is 668. And I couldn't remember the numbers. And I was standing there, I was like, 666. And I kept saying it in my head. And the kids are all just looking at me. One of the girls from the back came up, took the marker out of my hand, and wrote the numbers for me. And she sat down, and we went on. And it was, I'm sorry, I'm tearing up a little bit because.
Oh my God, I'm like, wow, okay, I feel it now. Wow.
Here's an 11-year-old girl who just knowingly, she knew that she had to do this, didn't ask, didn't do it, just got up out of her seat and wrote it down for me. And we kept going. And at the end of the year, in sort of the ceremonies that I have with my kids every year, I mentioned that in her card about how you helped me and how much that meant to me. And so being vulnerable and owning the things that I am as a person, that's been the thing that
it's obvious that your students love you.
Well, you know what? On one point, they might say, well, you know, Mr. Miller, he gives lots of homework. He gives you hard work to do and all that stuff. But when it comes down to it, I think they do have a sense. They do have compassion. They do have empathy. They sometimes have problems showing it. But, hey, you know, they do it in their own ways. Yeah.
What a beautiful story.
It is. I've learned to be vulnerable with other people, to be honest about my feelings. Saying how I feel. I mean, I wouldn't be on a podcast right now if I hadn't made the decision that I can be vulnerable to other people. And, you know, at the beginning you said, what is authentic gay man? I think for me, an authentic gay man is someone who's not afraid to be vulnerable, not afraid to share what he thinks, not afraid to share his emotions and his feelings. And that's what I'm working on.
And doing an amazing job, I might add. You know, the reason I asked the question about, you know, what did you experience out in the outer world, you know, when you started to put you first and take care of you was, and you clearly demonstrated that with the student who came up and took the chalk out of your hand, is when you started to take care of you, the world stepped up in its own way, in small ways, and started to take care of you. I really believe that we train people how to treat us. This is the, like, the core of my work. We train people how to treat us in three different ways. But one of those ways is the way they see us treat ourselves. And when you begin to care for yourself and put yourself first, it's not a conscious thing. The world doesn't really get it consciously. It's an energetic thing. Yep. And they respond in like kind. Mm-hmm. And that's clearly demonstrated in your story.
But, which brings me to another one. I actually lost friends when I started being vulnerable. I started sharing what I was thinking, who I was as a person. There are people that just couldn't handle that. And so I learned to move on and not be responsible for that, because I knew that that was their issue. I mean, if they didn't want me to be honest and open, and Grant's being silly right now and they can't deal with that or whatever, I didn't blame myself for the fact that I lost a couple of friends by changing that self, that inner part of myself.
Well, you lost what you thought were friends.
Bingo.
You know, vulnerability is polarizing. That's the beauty of vulnerabilities. When we get vulnerable, it does one of two things. There's two different kinds of people and the way they respond. Those that scream and run in the opposite direction, i.e. your friends who suddenly just weren't around because it made them uncomfortable, or the other group that want to come and sit right next to you. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely have grown to love that polarizing aspect, because it proverbially separates the men from the boys. Mm-hmm. You know, I want those people to scream and run, because when they scream and run, it creates more space for the ones that want to come and sit right next to me.
I love that. I love that. But I think that sums up the reason why you're my friend, is because both of us are able to be vulnerable with each other. It's just, you know, friends that are saying, you know, I can tell you this story, or I can say that this is how I'm feeling, and being authentic about it.
Yeah. It's been more than once that we've been on a call together and both shed a tear or two.
Yeah. And I keep going on this idea of, you know, what has been the silver lining. I've come to value certain friendships a lot more because of this situation. I have my friend Sean. He is absolutely amazing. He was there during my cancer thing. He lived elsewhere. He flew up to Canada in Nova Scotia to be with me for a week and to help me. I had another friend come from Washington, D.C. I had another friend fly in from the West Coast of Canada, and they would come for a week or two. And these are the sorts of friendships that I value so much, because, I mean, Sean, I can say anything. I can say to him, look, Sean, I'm feeling really sorry for myself. I'm being a real jackass today. And, you know, he'll just listen, and then we'll discuss it. And there's no reflection on, well, you know, Grant, you're a really flawed person. It's just, that's who Grant is. And that's what he is at that moment. And for me, it's such an incredible experience to have friends where I can be myself and not worry that I have to change myself to be something that I'm not, because that's what I did with my ex-husband. I made myself into something that I was not really. I wasn't myself. And with Sean and my friend Gary in Pasadena, and with you and others that I've met, I can be myself, and I don't have to worry about whether they're judging me for who I am. They just accept me. And, you know, for the listeners, they might say, well, what's so hard about accepting oneself and who you are? The old me would have said, oh, no, I can't let them see that, you know, I'm a weightlifter, but I like bird watching. You know, oh, that's not masculine, right? You know, that I like cooking or whatever. It was just those things that are interested in me. I'm also a nerd, right? I love Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm writing a novel about science fiction. And I love sci-fi and love Doctor Who and all that stuff. But sharing that with other people, it would be, no, you don't share that. You don't let them know who you really are. And it wasn't until I worked through this process that I realized it's saying, be who you are with other people and relish that. And I've set a goal for myself, Maddox, for this year, is that I want to start taking the opportunity when I'm out in public. If I'm at a club, or if I'm at a dance, or if I'm at a workshop at school and someone does some drumming or something, I'm going to get up and bloody well dance. and I'm going to dance like nobody's watching. So that's my goal, is because the old me would be absolutely petrified to do that. Like, oh no, they'll think I'm a nut, or, oh, I think I'm crazy or something, or, oh, they'll think, oh, what a klutz, he's not a good dancer or something. And I have seen people do that, where they get up and they just dance. And I'm going, how do they do that? Where did they get the nerve to do that? And so that's one of my goals for 2022.
And you're answering that. You now understand where they got the nerve to do that.
They're being themselves. They're being authentic. And, you know, it almost feels like I'm born again to some extent. I mean, to discover at 59 that if I just be myself and be comfortable with that and be happy with who I am, life goes a lot easier.
Oh, it attracts all the right people to you.
Yeah.
All the right people to you. You know, the plot thickens. You know, now you're telling about all these people that came to be with you during your cancer treatment. And that is a result of you loving you and putting you first, you caring for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I had an awareness here a few years ago, maybe about 3 years ago, that I mean, I'd always known that I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel safe around gay men. Mm-hmm. And I had searched everywhere trying to find that safe space. You know, any given, do you have safe space for me? Are you safe? Do you have safe space for me? And never found it. And then had the awareness at one point here about 3 years ago that safe space isn't out here. It's in here inside of me. And I'm responsible to create that safe space. And Grant, as soon as I created that safe space, which merely was just an aspect of me really communing with the little boy that lives inside of me and reassuring him that I had his back, that I was an adult and could fucking take care of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As soon as that safety was established inside of me, suddenly I could see safe space everywhere I looked, safe people and safe space. You know, all of this is an inside job. All of it.
Exactly. Look what you're doing now as a result of that. I mean, it's absolutely amazing that we're sitting here actually doing a podcast about gay authentic men.
It is. If you'd have told me this even a year ago, I would have probably been in complete disbelief. You know, I want to let the listeners know, because they're hearing this really, really deep conversation, and I don't want to let them know that although we told you that we have known each other for about 2 years and we have conversed and had many conversations, we have never met in person.
No, that's true.
We have only met in Zoom calls. He lives in Canada and I live in Texas, and not that we won't meet at some point in time. I sincerely hope that we do, but as of yet, we have not been able to put our arms around each other and hug each other or look into each other's eyes that didn't include a screen and a camera. Mm-hmm. And yet we've still managed to develop a relationship where we can be really, really real with each other. And we don't spend much time when we talk, we don't spend much time on superficial bullshit.
No.
We talk about shit that matters, you know?
That's true. Hey, that just brought up a thought. Do you remember the first time that you and I actually talked? Do you remember what we did? We spent 2 minutes staring in each other's eyes. That was the job. Remember that?
We did.
We were asked, don't say a word, just sit there for 2 minutes and look in each other's eyes.
You're right. We were on a connection call in a big online gay group. And that was, they broke us up into little two-man breakout rooms. And that was our assignment, was to spend 2 minutes in silence, staring directly into each other's eyes.
That's right.
That was how we connected.
Right. And after those 2 minutes, I knew that I wanted to know more about you, because I could sense who you were as a person just by doing that. And I have to add the caveat that for me to look in someone else's eyes, that has been a big shift for me. Even my friend Sean said that on Zoom calls 2 years ago, I would always have my head turned to the side, not looking at him directly in the eyes. But he's been commenting lately about how I actually look him straight in the eyes, like I'm looking at you right now, because that's the connection.
Well, and so, in the 2 years that I've known you, you have moved mountains, Grant.
Cheers.
I've watched you grow so much and come so far on your journey. It's been emotional at times to watch. It's been beautiful to watch. It's been inspiring to watch. And I just, you know, I want you to know that I really admire your dedication to doing your work. This is one of the things that I kvetch about when it comes to gay men, is there's this universal resistance to working on yourself. Mm-hmm. It's just much easier to smoke a joint, have a cocktail, or inject some kind of, snort something up your nose or something. And
or having mindless sex every other night.
Oh my God. You know, there is so much that, and I'm not bashing, I'm just saying that there's so much that our community does to distract, to numb, to avoid, to deny. And that's because when you don't have the denial or the distraction or all those things in place, you're in pain.
Yeah.
You're in pain. And we sooner or later, if we don't want to live out our entire lives in pain, we have to confront that pain. We have to do the work.
Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes the work isn't pretty.
Oh my God. A lot of times it isn't pretty.
I've had to go inside myself and really look at what I was feeling, like resentment, jealousy towards other people, the feeling of wanting to get revenge on my ex-husband for the things that he did. I mean, I could sit here and for the next 20 minutes, I could tell you all the things he did wrong in that relationship. I mean, yeah, he stole, he cheated, he lied. He did everything. And yet I tried to make the relationship work. So what he actually gave me, like I said earlier, was my self-respect. And knowing that those things are not who I am, it's not what I want. So I'm not going to set myself up into a relationship like that again. And like I said earlier, I did the second relationship, but it was exactly the same thing. And it ended abruptly, just before the cancer, in exactly the same way. Except, well, my ex-husband, I kicked him out of the house and said, look, get out. I've had enough of you. And thankfully he went. But the other guy, he just dumped me right after New Year's Day.
I do hear the conviction in your voice as you say, not willing to do that again, not going to happen.
So I'm going to change that dumped me. I'm going to change that because that's kind of a negative connotation. I'm putting it on him. Yeah, he left, but he did me a favor.
Yes, he did. He
did me a favor.
Because anybody that knows anything about narcissism is once a narcissist gets in your life, it is almost impossible to get rid of them. They become like a parasite feeding off of you.
And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because the second relationship, he had me convinced that I had to say goodbye to all my gay friends because they all might want to sleep with me. So by the end of that 2-year relationship, I had pushed all my friends away that might potentially, quote, sleep with me, whether they would or not. And I didn't do it fast enough. And that, there were still a couple left by New Year's Day. And that, so he decided, well, I'm toxic and I'm going to leave you. And I was at that point sitting there going, what the fuck? What did I do wrong? You know, here, it's just deja vu. It's gone through this whole cycle. And again, I'm feeling like I'm at fault for something. And through all this work, I've come to discover, I've backed up the tape to that point and said, wait a second. I was just being me. I wasn't doing any of the things that he suggested I was doing. If anything, I was the most faithful person he could ever been with. Same thing goes with my ex-husband. I never cheated on him. I didn't have to lie to him saying, oh yeah, I didn't have sex with anybody. I didn't, because I loved him enough and I respected, because when I said, I'm not going to do that, that's what I did. And so that's up front for me now. I don't lie.
You know, you said, you know, what the fuck, what did I do wrong?
Yep.
And there is an answer to that question. You know, and it is backing it way back up to the beginning when you chose not to see all of the red flags.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. 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 Once burnt, twice shy, they say. But look at me. I went into it a second
time. Twice burnt.
However, the good thing about, you know, you asked me earlier, what's the silver lining? I have almost gotten into relationships. People have started to date me, or they've shown me the intention that they're interested in me. And I had to say, you know, hey, Joe, you're a really nice guy. I'm just using Joe. It's not really his name, but, you know, so-and-so, you know, you're a really nice guy, but this isn't going to work. It's just, it's not a match. And I would try not to go into detail as to why, because I say, no fucking way am I getting into another narcissistic relationship, because this person, you could tell just in the reactions, because after seeing it in my ex-husband and my partner after him, I could see the signs and I know what the signs are. And I saw them in these people and I saw the red flags and I said, the new me is going to say no.
Well, and a narcissist can sniff out a codependent 100 miles away.
Yep. And those two that I said no to, they tried again and again. And
well, that's the universe really, like, yeah, you know, supporting you, I believe, you know.
As a matter of fact, over Christmas, one of them contacted me and I couldn't even find out who he was on the phone because it didn't have his name identified. And I'm saying, who is this? And he gave his name. Oh, so for God's sake, sorry, have you not given up? And I just blocked him. Said, yeah. You know, that's the other issue about my change. I now block people on Facebook because if they're going to be rude or mean or mean-spirited, the old me wouldn't have, oh, no, you know, I can't block them. They'll think I'm a bad person. You know, so
And what you're doing when you set those hard boundaries is you're sending a signal out to the entire universe, no longer willing to do this. And it's only a matter of time where those people will stop showing up in your life because you don't need them anymore. They've been playing a role in the movie of your life for a reason. They've come into your life for a very beautiful reason, painful reason, but beautiful reason. But there'll be a point where you won't need that role to be played anymore. You'll be on to the next, next growth.
And, you know, I think as I'm experiencing, I've been out there a bit since COVID's kind of waning a bit, and I've met a few people. And although it was a wonderful opportunity to meet them, the old me would have sort of stretched it out because out of fear of just saying, I'm going to reject them by saying no. So I've had to say to people, you know, you really are a nice guy. They might have been truly a really nice guy. I really liked them, but there just wasn't a chemistry. There just wasn't a connection. And being honest about that and not saying, okay, well, I'm going to really hurt his feelings. I mean, ultimately, what's important is that I am speaking my truth.
Yeah, his feelings are his responsibility.
Bingo, exactly. And that was my hard lesson, is because I would always take on everyone else's feelings and I would do everything to prevent their feelings from being that way. And coming to own whose feelings are whose, my feelings are mine. I have to deal with them. I have to acknowledge them. They do too.
Yeah.
So it's not my job.
Beautiful, beautiful, Grant. So if you were going to impart one nugget of wisdom on the listeners, what would it be? Based on your experience and everything you've shared, what is the one nugget of wisdom that you would share?
Dig deep, look inside, love what's in there. If there's something that doesn't do justice to you, get rid of it and be aware of it. Love yourself. Accept yourself, look at all your positives and not your negatives. I mean, I could sit here and give you a whole ton of negatives that I used to have in my head about myself. But if you look at more of the positive things, the things that I have in my life that are positive, they're the more important things.
They are the more important things.
Show that I am authentic. This is who I am. And that's what I want to be.
Well, and the law of attraction teaches us that whatever we focus on expands. So if you're focused on all the negative things, you just get more negative. If you're focused on the positive things, you get more positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at how my life has gone since I've dealt with this. I'm self-publishing a novel that I've written. I'm starting to plan my retirement. I'm starting to look at maybe buying a camper to tow on the back of the car so that I can go travel around, meet you and meet all the friends that I've met on the connection calls, and just to get out in the world and start doing things that I want to do, not what someone else wants to do. So here, yeah, I've got this big bucket list. I went to Yosemite this past year, and all these things have been on my bucket list, but I've never gotten to them because I was always taking care of someone else. So my golden nugget is live your life for the way you want to live, and the person who's right for you will fall into that place.
Beautiful.
It's going to happen because that's the way it's supposed to happen.
Mic drop. Beautiful. There's nothing else to add. That was so flawless. Nothing else to add to that. That's beautiful.
Cheers.
Well, so let's move into what I call rapid fire questions.
Uh-oh. This could get me into trouble.
And so with rapid fire questions, have rapid fire answers. Don't go into too much detail or too much thought process. Just come out with, you know, one or two sentences, whatever comes up first.
Okay.
When was the last time you cried in front of another gay man?
Just a few minutes ago.
Yep. Yep. And before that?
In front of my boss at school. There was a disagreement with another staff member. I was authentic with the other staff member. We resolved the conflict because I was being authentic. And I told them how it made me feel. So I cried. And they understood why.
Beautiful. Wow, beautiful, Grant. When is the last time you apologized?
To my students. Last week, I was online with my students because of COVID here in Nova Scotia. I got cranky. And I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything overly wrong. I was just coming on really strong. And I stopped at the kids and said, you know, hey, my friends, I'm going to say I'm sorry. I'm a little bit out of sorts today. And I just wanted to know that it's not your fault. It's just how Mr. Miller's feeling today. So I apologize to my kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is vulnerability. Wow. Beautiful, Grant. And final question. When you're about to take your last breath and you're reflecting back on your life, what will be the most important thing to you?
That I lived my life the way I wanted to live, and I accomplished all my goals because they were important to me. And that I'm going knowing that I've lived my life to the fullest.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, this has been nothing short of amazing. And, you know, I ask you to really have the audience feel it. And I think you knocked it out of the ballpark. I know I certainly felt it. So there's one thing that I want to leave you with before we wrap.
Yeah.
And that is, I want you to hear from me that you are indeed an authentic gay man.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. It's nice. You know what? I'm going to say that validation comes from within. But when someone sees you eye to eye, it says the same thing that I'm saying inside of my head. That's not conceit. That's just understanding and empathy and compassion for another human being. So thank you for saying that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being my guest. It was awesome.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to join you.
Thank you, Grant.